Hey everybody, Patrick Connor here, and welcome back to Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. I am here with my buddy, Aris Pina, who is a CompuBox operator, fellow boxing history lover, and also hipster number one. How's it going?
What's going on, man? Proud boxing number one checking in.
That's right. We had to talk about Alexander Usyk's victory over Anthony Joshua. Just happened yesterday. It's a pretty big victory, man.
I mean, that called for an immediate reaction for such an epic victory that was. We discussed it earlier this week, and both of us had come to the summation that Usyk had all the skills to win the fight, but we thought that at the end of the day, Joshua might be able to just, you know, probably win a close decision or so. I had messaged you yesterday and said that I was leaning more toward Usyk, but I still wasn't convinced that he was going to be able to win the decision.
Yeah.
Ended up going through it and winning without that, like, it would have to be an out-and-out robbery if for him to be, like, you know, for him to lose that fight. That was an absolute, you know, some people were debating it today on Twitter, but that was what you call a masterclass by Usyk from the beginning till end. That was just a beautiful performance, the way he used his angles, the way he used his feints, that use of his left hand, the use of his jab, his footwork, everything he did. It was a perfect game plan. He had Joshua befuddled. When Joshua was able to come on in the middle round to start using body shots and started timing his punches and landing and subsequently marking up Usyk, and it looked like the tide was turning, Usyk was able to turn it up to another level soon after that. And it was just a beautiful performance. You know what I mean? He beat one of the top fighters in the world. He beat Anthony Joshua, beat the odds. He beat him in his backyard, which was huge. And he did it without any controversy. It was just like a great performance from beginning to end. And he's the heavyweight champion right now.
He used the term masterclass, which is, you know, a reference it to is. Some of the, well, it's a reference to some of the discourse that's going on boxing Twitter, for instance, where a guy I've known a long time, Adam Abramowitz, used the term and said that he didn't feel as though it was a master class, just because I suppose his definition of master class is a little bit different, but a lot of people were getting into that conversation and I guess trying to define the term. But the point being, I kind of felt like it was somewhat trivial arguing to say whether or not it was a master class, because the point is, it's a really entertaining fight. And Alexander Usyk, he stepped up. And like you said, yeah, against not only the odds in the fight, where Anthony Joshua is the bigger fighter, the stronger fighter, more experienced heavyweight, and, you know, the champion, as it were, or the title holder, whatever you want to define it as, but he's going into enemy territory in a very big setting, you know, just a lot of things that going against him. And he fought exactly how you said, actually, when we did the preview, and when we also spoke off of the show, you pretty much said he was going to have to pull kind of like a Lomachenko type of style, which is exactly how he opened up that fight, back and forth, southpaw orthodox, or, well, not so much southpaw orthodox, but just kind of like moving his lead foot, dart all over the place. Yeah, and that's pretty much the kind of thing that he did, at least over the first half or so of the fight. So, yeah, it was a close fight on paper. It was, in a lot of the rounds, they were closely contested, at least a handful of them. But boxing scoring being the way that it is, I could see a lot of people having fairly wide scores for Usyk, who just won the closer rounds by a clearer margin, at least I felt.
He did. He, you know, when the rounds that he won, he definitely won them, and he controlled the early part of the fight. I don't remember my exact score at the halfway point, but I think I had it around like 4-2 Usyk or something like that. And that's when Joshua started coming on. At that point, like, it was a chess match. You could tell both guys were just thinking a lot, like their brains were just, you know, computing a lot going on in there. But Joshua was just a step behind him at that point most of the time. And it's not a knock on Joshua. Usyk is just that such good a fighter that he's always like a step ahead of his opponents, it seems. But once Joshua started catching a beat on him, I remember as the fight started getting closer and Joshua started, you know, landing on the scorecards with the body shots and marking Usyk up and working on him a little bit, it almost seemed like, I remember saying to myself, I think Joshua has reached his peak, so to speak. And that Usyk, I still felt, could take it to another level and it was going to be necessary to take it to another level to make sure he just pulled ahead for good, almost like in a race. And that's what he did around like round 9, round 10. He really just took it to another level again, and exactly how I thought of it. Joshua couldn't really bring it to himself there, and that's what Usyk completely took over in the fight and then almost stopped him in the last round.
I had tweeted something either the day before the fight or 2 days before the fight. I don't remember which, but the point being that I tweeted that much of the fight was going to hinge on Joshua's jab and whether or not he could get his jab working, how long he could sustain his jab. I don't have any CompuBox numbers with me, and I guess I didn't think to look at them, to be honest. But I would imagine he does better when he throws a lot of jabs in fights overall. And he was kind of pawing with the jab, but he was obviously having a lot of difficulty with a moving target, being that he's bigger, despite having the range, generally the kind of fighter who's going to have to sit down to throw a big right hand. And he was having a tough time hitting a moving target against Usyk early on. And so he wasn't really landing much of his jab. And finally, when Usyk started settling down, probably is from a combination of not being able to keep up that pace for super long, because almost nobody can at that size. But also Joshua finally, the work that he was doing some work. It wasn't that he wasn't landing. It's just that it wasn't nearly as eye-catching as Usyk early on. But the combination of those things started finally wearing on Usyk, and Joshua started working his jab, landing his jab, doing very well. But
he's finally being more aggressive instead of trying to go tit for tat and trying to like outthink Usyk, right, trying to box with him, which was like a stupid game plan to begin with. Because
it was the wrong move.
You can't try to outthink him and try to think you're gonna, you know, be able to just like compete with a person like that. It wasn't gonna happen. And Usyk took full advantage of it early on.
Right.
And instead, then when he finally started imposing himself and throwing more often, trying to using his size to really back up Usyk and work on it. And then the combination of Usyk also slowing down because of the pace he was putting on, that's when Joshua was able to bring it back into the fight. But
yeah. Well, and the way that Usyk closed was huge.
Yes.
I mean, not just in the 12th round, but he picked it up in the championship rounds, as they say, the rounds 10, 11, 12, and clearly closed stronger in all of those rounds. And then closed the fight with Anthony Joshua on the verge of being stopped, and I think the bell appeared to toll a little bit early, but regardless, Anthony Joshua was in a pretty bad way to end the fight.
He was done. He just slumped into this corner. He looked like he was in pain. He was exhausted, just bewildered, and just defeated
completely. Well, and you got to give him you got to give him credit, because after he lost to Andy Ruiz Jr., he gave Andy Ruiz Jr. credit. He didn't try to, you know, mm-hmm. use some funky excuse or something like that. And same thing, after he lost to Oleksandr Usyk, he comes out and says, hey, look, I lost to the better fighter. It happens. And I mean, apart from
heavyweights, can take heed of that, I guess, and should use that as an example instead of going on their own rants for about a year or so.
Well, I would definitely prefer a fighter, even if it's even just the appearance of a fighter kind of being gracious is probably helpful to the sport overall. But beyond that, though, it's a helpful attitude to take from the standpoint of if a fighter's truly trying to be great, if a fighter's truly looking at their legacy or truly trying to challenge themselves rather than just stay undefeated, make as much money while taking as little damage as possible, which there's a lot to be said for that. I'm not trying to knock that per se, but that, you know, it's a good look for him to be as gracious and whatnot. But even so, you know, beyond the humility and whatnot after the fight, you do have to wonder where Anthony Joshua is mentally. It's good to see that he's accepting the loss and appears to be ready to learn from it. But he's just kind of he's difficult to figure. You know, he posts a lot of like kind of cryptic social media shit where like you don't really know like exactly what he's talking about. And uses a lot of like symbolism type of stuff that, and then, you know, he gets asked about it and he tends to be kind of coy in interviews. So I don't know. I don't know where this leaves him mentally, especially now that he's already kind of like a two fight a year fighter and we're probably not going to see him back in the ring for several months. What do you think is going to happen with Anthony Joshua? I mean, we'll get to Usyk for a second, but what do you think is going to happen with AJ from here?
I think an immediate rematch is the only logical option from here. I'm sure he's going to take it. I think he already hinted at that after the post, at the post-fight interview, that he'd want to go back in there. fact of the matter is this isn't the first loss now, so it's not going to be as difficult for him to adjust after, I guess, losing again as it was the first time to Andrew Ruiz. He seems to be able to take a loss well, as opposed to other people who just kind of other fighters, not anyone in particular, just, you know, other fighters in the past who, like, sometimes a loss will shatter them mentally and they're not really able to, like, come back from that. Joshua, at least from the Ruiz fight, was able to come back from that and, you know, put on a comprehensive outboxing in the rematch to win. So
it's actually a really good point.
Yeah, he's, you know, again, mentally, I think he'd, you know, for himself, that, like, he's going to take this time, adjust, you know, spend time with his family, whatever he has to do. But when the time comes and it's going to be for a rematch, he's going to go for it. And like we discussed the other day, in terms of Usyk, I mean, he has three of the titles now. But with having three of the titles, that means there's going to be a bunch of, like, muddiness and discussions about mandatories and goofiness and what goes on. So chances are they're going to get divided again, because even though he can go into an immediate rematch, which is probably going to be his best option to do there in terms of money, star power, whatever it is, the IBF, for example, is probably going to jump on and say, hey, you need to fight so-and-so as our mandatory challenger. So that's where the only monkey wrench is going to come out on that end.
Yeah, there's the more belts, there always seems to be more like mandatory type of things for fighters to deal with, and that's probably going to wind up being the case at some point for Usyk. Or I don't know, I have no idea if that is going to interfere with the immediate rematch issue.
I don't think it like would that. I think you would probably drop it if he was smart. Like, who cares about the IBF at this point?
Yeah, that would be this. Yeah, exactly, that'd be a smart thing to do, is just drop the belt for the
moment. Are you gonna, I don't know who the top contender is, but, like, for example, are you going to go into an immediate rematch with AJ that's going to bring you tons of money and accolades and add to your legacy, or fight Charles Martin?
A good point. No, that is a good point. Well, and, you know, before we started recording, depending on how you view Usyk's experience with the World Series of Boxing, I think it was, and how, you know, whether or not you consider that a professional fight, Alexander Usyk's about 20 pro fights into a career and a pro career, and has already unified cruiserweight and became the man in cruiserweight through the tournament we talked about the other day, and now holds several belts at heavyweight. And obviously there's the argument over, well, he's not the lineal champion because Tyson Fury beat Deontay Wilder in the rematch, and Tyson Fury never truly retired, and whatever. I mean, that's its whole other argument, I suppose. But I guess we've reached a point now where it's like, whoever wins Fury Wilder 3 versus Usyk, or whoever wins the Usyk Joshua rematch. That's it sucks that we have to keep kind of like moving the pieces, where every year it was like, all right, a couple of years ago was Deontay Wilder and Joshua, then it was Fury and Joshua. And then it was, all right, well, maybe Tyson Fury and Ruiz. Oh, no, it's Fury and Joshua.
This is, like, heavyweight boxing. This is what heavyweight boxing is. It's never been
that. Son of a motherless goat.
Yes. It has never been as easy as taking the two best guys in the division and putting them together. It always had to be a bunch of chess pieces and things moving along and everything. Look how long it took for example, for modern times at least, like modern history. Look how long it took for Lewis and Lennox Lewis and Evander Holyfield to finally get together in 2000, in 90, you know, 99, 2000, right? Look how long it took for Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis to get together. The list goes on since then. Like, it takes these things a while. If anything is going to happen, it's probably going to happen in late 2022 to early 2023 now.
I got to give at least some credit on the broadcast, the Usyk Joshua broadcast, that some elements of it, the production was much better. Like, well, mostly it was the in-person stuff. Like the walkouts were really cool.
Yeah, of course.
You know, the crowd aspect of it was pretty cool, the noise, etc. But dude, I'm sorry to say this. I said it on Twitter. I mean, so there's no point. I'm like hiding it or anything, but like, dude. I mean, man, DAZN's broadcasts are just from a production standpoint. Just, I mean, whatever. It's difficult. Like it's honestly distracting sometimes. And that shit makes it really tough to watch sometimes. Anyway, the broadcast itself, like I said, other parts of it were actually really cool. And I wish they would do, I know we can't do like arena shows every single time for cards, but the way that they did the walkouts and kind of just paying more attention to the pageantry of it, dude, I say this every time we get something like that. I love it. I always love the big kind of spectacle thing. That's always fun.
UK is always big for that too. They've always in Europe, you know, for example, have always set like the high standard when it comes to big entrances, going back to Prince Nassima beforehand. But yeah, everyone's always said on Twitter and other times too that that the United States and American boxing can like take some lessons from how they put on productions and, you know, the atmospheres and ring walks and everything like that when it comes to big fights over there. Because they make it a big spectacle all the way back to the Klitschko fights. Like a Klitschko routine title defense back in the day, that was going to be like against like Ray Austin or something like that. It was going to be like an easy 2-round blowout. Would like, you know, look like a crazy rock star event beforehand.
Well, it's like that's one of the big differences between a bigger US show and a bigger like UK show, for instance, especially if it's in like a soccer stadium somewhere nearby where there's football stadium, and there's a significant football team nearby doing like chants and shit like that. Hear the massive like, shit. It's like people in the US are like shocked by that. They're like, oh my God, you know, just watch some football matches. That shit gets out of hand. No, it's a pretty cool atmosphere, and also very cool from the standpoint of, man, you know, it's been a long ass pandemic. It's been pretty shitty. It's been not being able to see bigger shows very often sucks. And so finally being able to see something that was a bigger deal, no matter how much of a super spreader event it might have been.
It wasn't canceled cool. Like that. You know what I mean? Like the fact of the matter was that like we've had a lot of big fights. We've had fights all over the time. In these past few months, every time we get really close, something's been getting messed up, whether it's COVID or injury or this or that. So boxing's been getting screwed a lot lately. It's a tough time right now.
But
the fact of the matter is this fight came through. It went through, and it was a very, very good fight from the beginning to end. Very compelling, dramatic, everything you want to call it. And we got a decisive winner out of it without any controversy. So for that matter, boxing won yesterday.
No question, dude. I wish there was just a little bit more focus on the fact that it was a really fun fight. It was a good overall competitive fight. And Usyk got marked up a little bit too. Of course he's going to. He's a smaller guy and he had to come forward in order to find angles and stuff like that to land his punches. So there was really no way around it. He was going to get punched. But really entertaining fight. So then I have to ask, if they do wind up doing a rematch, it's pretty interesting what you said earlier that Anthony Joshua has the experience of fighting somebody a second time and having to kind of like zero in on their weaknesses and stuff. Granted, it was probably a little bit easier with Anthony Joshua coming into the fight heavier, kind of, you know, feeling his oats or whatever, coming into the fight, having settled into a little too much into the routine of being a new heavyweight champion. So I'm sure that was helpful for Anthony Joshua. And I don't know whether or not Usyk's going to do the same thing, but from like a tactical standpoint or from the standpoint of like, what do you think Anthony Joshua is going to have to do? What's the name of the game here?
I mean, I'm not going to try to pull a full-on Eddie Futch here and try to give, like, you know, technical expertise, but Joshua needs to figure out who he wants to be as a fighter, because he seems like he's, like, caught between styles again. you know, at one point he was trying to outbox Usyk and trying to lean back and just rely on his jab, which was kind of pawing, and he wasn't really using it with full force until later on, or and then when he finally started being aggressive, so on. Like, he needs to figure out what he wants to do. And at the same token, in his corner, they seemed like him and McCracken, when things were getting Robert McCracken, when things were getting serious and Usyk was building up a lead and kind of like, you know, outboxing him and outthinking him, and Joshua was getting a little stressed and confused, they seemed to have like some discomfort in the corner and like confusion, like they did in the Ruiz fight when the first time. And so Joshua needs to address these things. He needs to figure out where he wants to be as a fighter in terms of just not trying to like be one thing or another. You need to settle to where you have to be and use that to your advantage. He's not a bad fighter at all. He's a very good one. He wasn't blown out or anything, or just completely whooped on and that there's no chance he could win a rematch. I mean, he was close. It was a close competitive fight through nine until Usyk really just, you know, took it to that next level. So Joshua just needs to work on a few of those things and get his corner in shape too. I mean, like, I don't think he's ever going to get rid of McCracken. He seems pretty loyal to him as a trainer and they've been through everything together, but something needs to be worked on upon that makes sure that, like, and when straights of like when things like this start happening, that they can still adjust and stay at the same level that a guy like Usyk was able to take it to.
So you didn't give the Eddie Futch, you gave like the Ferdy Pacheco.
No, oh, yeah, can, there we go.
I can dig it. Sheesh. No, I mean, you know
how he has to be. Well, I'm like, God, I've been watching so many old like 90s shows on things. And then, like, when I was a kid, I really, really, not to drag off too far right now, but when I was a kid, I really thought Ferdy Pacheco was, like, the smartest, really good, like, you know, because he was an old guy who worked with Ali, so I figured he knew everything. And now myself, as a person, about to turn 37, and I rewatched this and re-listened to him. Dude, he sucked so bad.
Yeah, dude, God. He wasn't very good, man. He said some off-the-wall shit. He was
all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah. Every he wasn't very good. Same. I remember watching old broadcasts and being like, yeah, Ferdy Pacheco, dude, that guy knew his shit. And then like years later, I'm like, ooh, damn, kind of not really, man.
I mean, just for like, you know, all right. Yeah. Just, oh my God, man. That was just like, dude. And he always called for Bobby. Yeah. Bobby, that was a crazy low blow. Bye-bye title, Bobby. Blah, blah, blah. Like, what are you, you know, just coming up with the most, he called Perno Whitaker Pee-wee throughout the fight with Chavez. He just, yeah. Oh, God. All right.
Yeah, dude. Well, that's why I made that joke. Because, you know, it wasn't quite Futch. It was Pacheco, though. It was not quite there. No, yeah. I think you're spot on, though, dude. I think that, I mean, I'm kind of ambivalent about the whole bringing in a new trainer or something like that, because I mean that could either go really well or be totally disastrous, and it's really tough to say.
Very rare to get a Lennox Lewis Emmanuel Stewart.
I don't, and maybe not even like a different trainer, but like an additional trainer just like as an advisory role, yeah, or something. Yeah, sometimes, sure. You know, you could do that shit too, but I don't know. I don't know whether or not that works, and it really depends on the relationship between the trainer and the fighter and all that stuff, blah blah blah. But the fact of the matter is, we've seen now in more than one fight, it's just that in the other fights where it was more successful, I think there were just different situations, but we've seen in more than one fight where Anthony Joshua gets hit solid, and if he's getting dinked up pretty good, he just doesn't react super well to it. I mean, it's like it takes him a little bit, like it's like a shock. Like he's, oh man, I'm getting touched up. And yeah, he like kind of gets stressed out and doesn't know what the fuck to do.
And he does rely on his corner too from that. At least in
he does settle down. Yeah. Well, and we've seen in all of these fights that he does settle down. That he's like, you know, he can get his wits about him. He can get a second wind, a third wind.
Yeah,
he did against Vladimir Klitschko, against Dillian White. He got hurt pretty good and came back. You know, we've seen this before, but it's just that Andy Ruiz Jr. didn't really give him much of a chance. Plus, the stoppage looking back was possibly a little premature. This one was a little bit different, where it was a little more sustained. Yeah. And you could see just in more instances where Anthony Joshua was not reacting well to being hit a lot. And so I think that whatever that is, I mean, that you can't really say, well, then go into the gym and get your ass kicked, because I don't really think that'll fucking help you. Yeah, it doesn't work that way, but he has to find a way to be a little bit more composed in the trenches. And somebody, I think a handful of people actually mentioned it yesterday about, well, there's no Manny Stewart or somebody like that to go to. And while I think that's kind of like a popular thing to say and often wrong, because whoever they're talking about wouldn't mesh well with Manny's style, Anthony Joshua might actually. And
I think he would have, the way with his size, and he's comparable to Lewis. If Stewart had a hold of him, absolutely. I think if he were still around today, he would have watched that fight and already have known what he could have done to try to make adjustments, for sure. That's a good comparison for him.
There were a number of times where Anthony Joshua actually did throw some pretty good body punches.
Yes.
But beyond that, his inside game is still pretty bad. And his, like, he reaches to grab onto an opponent as soon as he starts getting hit or they get close. That's his first instinct, which is not necessarily bad, but he doesn't do it well. He doesn't hold on to him very well. And that's one thing that Manny Stewart was good at teaching the tall fighters who had long arms, like specifically Lennox Lewis, obviously. But that's one of the big problems, I think, with Anthony Joshua, is his inside game is not very good. And if a guy like Usyk, who granted is good and can figure a way in, but if other fighters can figure their way in too, like Andy Ruiz Jr., you have to be able to know what to do once they get in there.
Absolutely, man. You know, having a good inside game as a big heavyweight is actually a rarity. You know, man, the best inside fighters as a heavyweight of the last 30 years would probably be like a Prime Riddick Bowe, for example, who would be able to get in there and really get inside with a guy like Holyfield and go tit for tat and go inside with him and usually get the better of him at the end of it. You know, like just a really tough guy can hit the body shots, uppercuts, things of that matter. Other heavyweights, guys like the Klitschko brothers, they had no inside game, for instance, even though they were tall, they're, you know, more like long range fighters. Lennox Lewis, his inside game, besides his uppercuts, once he held your head down and caught you with one of those, I guess the Michael Grant, so to speak,
yep. You know,
other than that, he wasn't known for like really being, having like a really good inside game like that. But Joshua displayed flashes of it yesterday, like you mentioned. You know, he was landing nice uppercuts to the body. He was landing right into the body, hooks to the body too. And that did noticeably slow Usyk down during the middle rounds. And that was at that point, like, he needs to, you know, work on that more, I guess, sustain stuff like that and try to use more of himself as like a big man instead of trying to box with him. Because he was caught in between styles and trying to box, not using his size so much. And that's why Usyk was able to just piece him up and dance around him and do what he had to do on him. Because he wasn't having a guy that wasn't imposing himself on him like that either.
Yeah, there were some flashes where you did see that he has improved as a fighter. And, well, I think that's one of the frustrating things about the kind of post-fight discourse about this fight, is that there's a lot of knee-jerk reaction that, oh, see, I told you Anthony Joshua was no good. I told you he always sucked. You know,
there was a major news broadcaster or whatever out there that tweeted him some pretty nasty stuff about him being trash or whatever, and some people put him out on that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like World Boxing News or something like that.
I
don't know enough about them to really give too much of a shit beyond just saying it's pretty fucked up and stupid.
Yeah, Joshua. Well, let me ask you this question, Ben. Do you think Joshua has reached his peak, or do you think he can still improve off of this?
Well, I mean, I've been saying this since like the beginning, since he turned pro, I should say, or since early on in his pro career. All right, I'm going to keep moving the goalpost. No, since earlier on in his pro career. I really agree with the sentiment that he's too muscular. He's too bulky. And not just from like, you know, an aesthetic, like how he looks point of view. Physiologically, the more muscle you have, the more blood and oxygen, those muscles need to work. And the more you work them, you know, the harder you need to breathe and the more you need to breathe, et cetera. That's why big muscular fighters tend to get tired faster. There are some exceptions. And for his size, Anthony Joshua actually is extremely well conditioned. But I feel as though both the conditioning aspect of it, because we've seen that he later on in fights tends to not do as well. Like, that's not just some imaginary thing. We've seen it. But also on top of that, I think it hinders him stylistically, where I think that he would be a little bit quicker. He would be a little bit lighter on his feet and could use his footwork better, assuming that he does have decent footwork, because he's somewhat plodding. He moves great for his size, but he is somewhat plodding. And then we saw that speed difference and the major footwork difference against Usyk. That's where he's going to really have a challenge, even in the rematches. Like, that's not going to change, you know, and I'm not entirely sure that, God, I mean, let me look, because I'm not even positive. A couple of years ago, we were like, well, he's young. Well, now he's 31. He's well into his career, and he's not liable to change his style or something like that anytime soon. So I don't even know if that's going to do any good. I have absolutely no idea at 31. But he has to try something. Short of just becoming a ferocious fucking monster who just says, fuck this, and just, you know, in the rematch is just like, if I get knocked out, I get knocked out, but I'm coming to like kill you. Short of that, I mean, there's gonna have to be some adjustment. So I'm not entirely certain what that is, but I don't know. I mean, I guess you also have to stop and say, which is kind of like a skewed off point of that, just that Anthony Joshua has been in a number of really good fights. He's a pretty entertaining fighter overall. You know, the Ruiz rematch wasn't that entertaining, but beyond that, most of his fights for the last handful of years have been pretty entertaining. So you have to kind of give him credit, number one, for being entertaining and being willing to get in there. But you know, I guess I also kind of start to wonder when that's going to take its toll too.
It's going to be interesting, man. Like I said, I know he's going to go right into an immediate rematch with Usyk, but I'm not sure in the time period if he's going to be able to make enough adjustments that Usyk, he'll be able to stay in with him. You know, one thing that I remember from the post-fight interview, when they asked Usyk, is this the best you've seen of him? He said pretty emphatically, no. And you got the sense that he wasn't BSing about that, you know, that like he really feels that he could still take it to another level. And I think he can too. He just did what he had to do to bring it to enough to win that fight. But like, you still haven't seen his full repertoire yet. And if that's the case, he's already loads ahead of the rest of the heavyweight division, with maybe the exception of Fury when it comes to being a slickster. But like, I don't know if those two are ever going to get together. That's a whole other issue, and so much politics and not
totally
ridiculous nuts that it's not even worth discussing right now. You know what I mean? But what I really want to bring up really quick as another note is with Usyk so easily dominating a guy like Joshua. And you know what? I actually didn't realize how close they were in size beforehand. I thought Usyk was a little bit like more noticeably smaller than Joshua than what he was. But like, Usyk was a decent size, smaller heavyweight, but he wasn't like completely, you know, dwarfed by Joshua. But then again, the way he came up and the way he was still able to dominate and the way he was able to compete, it just shows you again that there's no need for this bridge weight division.
It's just another in the long list of fights that prove that, you know, a good smaller fighter
can beat a good bigger one.
Yeah, can beat a good bigger fighter, and that it's not necessarily. I think the consensus often is that, like, well, a good big man will beat a good little man. That's the that's the saying. You know, I'm not even sure who came up with it, but that's the saying, and that's the thing a lot of people believe. I think that generally speaking, that's probably going to be true. Otherwise, they wouldn't have weight classes. But we have enough examples of that not being the case that, like, coming up with like extra divisions when they're already what, 19, 17, 19?
Around there, yeah. What? From strawweight all the way
up. It's unnecessary. It's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get to a certain point, like anybody can knock anybody out with a good punch. Like,
and the thing of the matter is that like Usyk was around the same size as Muhammad Ali when he fought Bob Foster. You know what I mean? That, like
very similar in both stature, yeah, and weight.
Same, exactly. So when you have that size and you're trying to say, is it really necessary to be like, well, these heavyweights today are just too big. A guy like Fury's too big for so. Usyk can dance around someone the size of Fury. Not I'm talking about Fury in general, but just someone of that general size and just make them look ridiculous. It doesn't have to be that case. Joe Lewis was talking
exactly
to people like Buddy Bear and Abe Simon and other monsters back in the day.
It's not to say that it's going to happen, but there are enough cases of it happening, you know?
Absolutely. Hell, you know, Steve Cunningham, who is levels below Usyk, completely flattened Fury on his back, almost, you know, almost took him out back when they fought, in an MSG back in the day. It doesn't need to be like that. So I'm just saying it was just another case for that division that didn't need to be there. But in terms of Usyk, another thing I was thinking of, where does this raise his stock to? Now, there's no question at all that with him and Holyfield, they're the two greatest cruiserweights that's ever lived that moved up to heavyweight, because they're the both that moved up and was able to win it, you know? And when you look at their trajectory too, Holyfield had already established himself as a heavyweight. I don't know who was, you know, how you want to look at it would be, which in terms of like more impressiveness in their first and in their initial run, because Usyk, you can't compare them now in terms of their complete run because Holyfield did so much history, right? So much as, you know, going on. But, like, in their initial runs, Holyfield initially moved up. First fight was against James Tillis. Had a few more fights against, you know, that war with Michael Doe, Seamus McDonough, Pinklin Thomas, and so on. And then he fights Buster Douglas. Buster Douglas was grossly out of shape and much smaller, and he ends up taking him out. Usyk moves up. Only has 16 pro fights or so at that point, even though he completely cleaned out the division, won the Super 6, which is incredible itself. He moves up and he only has two fights at heavyweight at that point against Witherspoon and Chaz Witherspoon and Chisora. Both of those fights that people are just kind of questioning him now for that. And then he fights a guy in Anthony Joshua who was in a lot better shape than Buster Douglas and bigger at that point, and ends up, you know, completely like tearing, just convincingly winning that. And
yeah,
it, I don't know. It's just fascinating to see now.
Well, and I mean, it's a fair question, dude, because you look at Evander Holyfield's pre-title heavyweight warm-up, you know, you got guys like Alex Stewart.
I mean, I forgot to mention him. Absolutely. Yeah, Stewart was a monster, though, coming up.
Well, both Alex Stewart and Dokes just by themselves, and there were like four other fights or something, too, but just those two by themselves were better preparation for a run at the title. And on top of that, and not to diminish what Holyfield did at all, because it's not like it was an awful division. It wasn't the greatest, but by the time he had gotten there, a bunch of those guys had kind of like softened each other up. You know what I mean? Like they'd already kicked each other's asses a little bit. So he wasn't dealing with quite the same, you know, he wasn't dealing with like a fresh set of fighters per se. And that's not to say that
Usyk is. They brought Holyfield up slowly to build him up, and I can see why they would do that, and it was the right way to do it at the time. Usyk just kind of jumped right into it, and well, it's going to be interesting to see now how Usyk is going to be able to sustain, if he's going to be able to leave the legacy that Holyfield was able to. Once Holyfield initially won the title from Buster Douglas, you know, we've already seen in history what he was able to accomplish after that, basically becoming one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. With everything he's done since then. The jury's still out on Usyk if he's going to be able to have that type of legacy at Holyfield. But to say the least, the fact of the matter is at only 19 pro fights, he's already stamped himself for the Hall of Fame. And that's pretty damn impressive.
Well, I can definitely tell you this much. David Haye's been saying something. I don't know. I saw him.
Oh, boy. Of course he has. Well, is he like complaining that about something about how he needs to fight Usyk now or some shit?
I don't even, I just saw him pop up on some little blurb wearing this fool's wearing like the Curious George man in the yellow hat.
Okay.
Fool's like looking like Indiana Jones over here in this interview.
Oh, Lordy Lord. Yeah, yeah.
Talking some sort of trash. I was only bringing him up too because
he's like the new Shannon Briggs now.
Yeah. Well, he's often thought of as like one of the better cruiserweights, and like he was pretty good too, but I don't think there's any question that what Usyk did both at cruiserweight and at heavyweight now are better than David.
I mean, no, he completely trounces him. Don't get me wrong. He had a good run in the early mid-2000s. But his heavyweight run has nothing compared to what he already did. Usyk's one win completely blows this shit away. What is he talking about?
I got two words for David Haye, dude. Carl Thompson.
I'm saying. Tony Bellew.
Just saying, Big Cat.
I mean,
Carl Thompson.
You know that his fight with Klitschko, or that could have been his defining fight. He ends up losing that one, right? And then he was supposed to have a fight with Fury. He ends up in the hospital for over something. Other fights have fallen through for this matter or that matter. Then he finally fights Tony Bellew and loses twice, trying to avenge BJ Flores of all people.
The toe, it's going to be pretty tough to live down the toe excuse.
Yeah, the toe. Okay, so what does he want now? Because he had that one fight on Triller. What is it? I'm not sure if it's an exhibition or a real fight. Now he wants to fight fucking Usyk. Really?
Yeah, man. Oh God. Yeah, he fought the trillionaire, the gazillionaire. Nah.
Yeah.
Bad news bears. I mean, he actually, I will say. I'll give David Haye this. He moved way better than I thought he would move, considering I thought his knees were shot, or they are shot. But he also did it against like some dude who like owns a Denny's or something. So, you know what I'm saying? So, but no, look, dude, Oleksandr Usyk, it was definitely his day yesterday. And we got to give Anthony Joshua some credit, not only for fighting hard, but for accepting the defeat, for taking it, I guess you could say, like a man, as they say.
You can't not like say you're not a fan of Joshua, because at the end of the day, he means well for the sport. He's a global brand out there, and like he's a positive dude who he's willing to fight the best.
Right. I
mean, not the easiest to do it, but he's willing to fight him. And if he loses, he's not going to make excuses about it and accepts the defeat as it is. And that's a rare thing in boxing. So.
Yep. Yeah, dude, you gotta give it up to him. I just wanted to mention that a couple other things on the rest of the card. First of all, Lawrence Oakley looking pretty good at cruiserweight, but they're already talking about, you know, pushing him up, and he needs to be a bridgerweight and all sorts of stuff, which kind of just
a bridgerweight.
Yeah, they're saying that he should go up to bridgerweight.
Well, he's gonna be the initial star of that division, I guess, right?
Yeah, these guys are killing me with this bridgerweight shit. But also, Callum Smith scored a absolutely frightening knockout over Lennon Castillo. But
yeah. I haven't seen that yet, but I need to. I've heard
it. It was definitely shades of. I'm sure somebody's already made the reference, because it's the quick and easy reference. But shades of Floyd Patterson versus Ingmar Johansson 2. Where it's like his legs are all shaking, and it's the exact, it's kind of nasty looking and awful. Luckily, he went to the hospital, he got released, and it sounds like he's doing just fine, thank goodness. But the rest of the card, I can't just not Campbell Hatton, buddy. There's only one Ricky
Hatton, man. You know, he's being.
There's only one Ricky Hatton, and it's not Campbell Hatton. I'm sorry. You know, he's struggled. He's at what, 3-4 fights into his career or something like that. And I've seen all of them, but
he's not ready for anything like that. No. Bro. He should probably still be an amateur at the end of the day. But
yeah, he seems like a very nice kid, but this definitely has the sniff of. Dude is doing it because his dad was a superstar.
Yeah.
And like possibly for the wrong reasons. I don't know. I don't know what's in his heart, but it point is like
he's struggling bad right now.
Well, and giving him wins like he was did not deserve yesterday. That's not helpful. That ain't gonna help him as a person. It ain't gonna help him as a fighter. It's not gonna help his legacy, whatever. So
these types of things never do, man. And like Even sons of pros who have a really extensive amateur backgrounds, who like we're about to make the Olympics, like Marvis Frazier, for example, just sometimes don't pan out like that. You know what I mean?
Right. It's
really tough. And they get pushed in the limelight really quick and get pushed quicker than they really need to be. Connor,
I had some high hopes for I had some high hopes for Sal Sanchez the third. No, I'm just kidding.
Dude, I'm so mad that that dude had to sully up his uncle's trunks whenever he got dropped and dusted on them. Like, what the hell, man? Those babies had never tasted canvas, and then he had to fight against Velez and get flattened on him.
And then he's getting like a blowout so that he could have like a fro. Like, come on.
Yeah, like, you know.
It was no good.
Much, man. And I like Elvis Phillips at that point. I thought he was like trying to live Sanchez's legacy up, and then he really trots that out. And was Aaron the one behind that? Of course he was.
I don't even remember. Probably, but I don't remember. But you know, dude, there haven't really been that many cases of a son being as good or better than a father.
Here's another one.
They're great.
But like you remember, because I just watched it recently on YouTube late at night, just scrolling through. Camacho Jr. his first loss, or was a technical draw against Jesse James Leja.
Where he's in the corner crying about how he can't see.
Yeah. And at that point, he was still like a really top prospect. Yep. You know, was about to be on the cusp of fighting for a world title, and he was.
He was one of the right around the early 2000s, he was one of the stars on Fox Sports Net fights.
And other fights. Yeah, America Presents was really shoving them down, everybody.
Yep. I remember when he beat up, remember Larry LaCourcier?
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, the one that went the distance with Chavez on a pay-per-view. Who can't forget running Larry?
Poor guy, dude. Yeah, they.
But then with this eating bald head that he had, and the little like halo type thing, yeah,
he looked like a little miniature bald bull when they trotted him. When they trotted him out against Camacho Jr., and he got thumped real bad. And I remember thinking, oh man, as soon as this kid runs into somebody for real, and even Jesse James Leao was like pretty worn, shop worn, but
he still had some. And there was, and I remember it was the first where he hit him with an overhand. And you saw Camacho start doing a little jig and whatnot. And from there, he couldn't, that was it. You know, Leao put her on his ass.
And actually, a really interesting footnote about that fight was, if I'm not mistaken, that was, if not the first, one of the first times a fight was changed. The result was petitioned to be changed. And
it was initially a Camacho win, wasn't it?
Yep. And actually successfully changed. That was like one of the first times that it actually happened, because that shit like never happens. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, dude, I remember that. That's funny.
It was just cool because it was held at Coney Island.
Yep. Man,
that was almost like his dad. That would, Camacho Jr. was never the same from that. He just never
wasn't
getting a third, but he wasn't. That was it for him. Soon after that, he lost to Omar Weiss. Which is a blast in the past for people who watch Friday Night Fights.
He was trained by Amilcar Brusa, the guy who trained Carlos Monzon.
Yeah. And that was, you know. And I was glad to see that too, man, because I was getting sick of Camacho thumping on like former faded lightweight champions and other like smaller guys than him. And
He built got up a little bit of comeuppance there for a moment. Well, David Lemieux really gave him that comeuppance.
Oh my God, man. Jesus.
Goodness gracious. Yeah, I almost feel bad for bringing that up. Now, you actually look at that shit in context, and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. actually did pretty damn well for himself as a pro.
Well, Top Rank made sure to protect him. I got to give them credit for that. They built him well, and they made sure they didn't put it like, they did it old school style where they gave him like a record against a bunch of guys because he never had an amateur record. So he just kept on fighting and fighting and fighting against dudes who were just on the go and on the learning
curve. Yeah, he was on pay-per-views left and right.
Yeah. But
I remember that shit.
If they were putting Butterbean on pay-per-view back in the day against guys he was going to automatically squash, they were able to do that with Chavez Jr. just because of his name. And because he looked kind of curious being really tall and skinny when he was back as a 140-pounder or whatever it was back way back when. And just seeing him learn on the job, and then eventually after like 15-20 fights, he finally would be able to step up against a guy like John Duddy and then get through that type of fight. And people are like, oh, well, maybe he has something going on here. But, you know, who was the Top Rank, because they built him to that pay-per-view fight with Martinez masterfully.
he came damn close. I mean, you know, it was like lucky shot status, but he came pretty close.
I mean, I'm saying this though. People were almost like, people that predicted that Chavez was going to win that fight, because there was a few of them. They were like, he almost won. I almost came out of my prediction. Bro, Chavez got his ass slapped up for 11 and a half rounds. Martinez's legs just gave out. And, you know,
he almost won the lottery, but
that was not quite. Don't try to act like that was Chavez's pressure that did that, okay? Martinez's body just fell apart at the end.
Well, he's been trying to, like, recapture that moment ever since, unsuccessfully.
Oh, man, he might be one of the saddest cases of a son turning pro in China. But there's been others, too, that, like, you know, during the mid-2000s that people have forgotten about that were around. You had, we mentioned Chaz Witherspoon, who was not Tim Witherspoon's son, but I think, like, his nephew or something like that. You had Howard Davis's kid, Dia Davis, who was a pro.
That's true. Yeah, that's right.
Yep, you had Buddy McGirt Jr.'s kid, who was featured a lot in ESPN in the early, mid-2000s, you know. So this was like a new phenomenon. A lot of these kids were turning pro, trying to do things, but none of them really were able to. Aaron Pryor Jr.
Yeah, you know? That's true, yeah. Demetrius Hopkins.
Yeah, exactly.
Got into a fight with Bernard, who kicked him out of the house.
Did he?
Yeah, I don't know the details, but like Bernard was like, putting him up in some house, or you know, it's like some like apartment or something like that, and then Bernard just like yanked that shit out from under him and kicked him out at some point.
Well, here's another one that's pretty wild. That's pretty funny. But here's one from that's pretty wild that I'm not even sure if it's been solved yet or not. But Carlos Monzon apparently had a son from the '90s that was a pro. And they had, and I have to look it up actually right now. Hold up. I can't even remember his name, but Monzon had a son from the mid-90s, apparently, and it looked like him too. If you found his phone, I think his last name was Mayano or something like that, Mayano, around there. But I read about it in Ring Magazine or KO Magazine, and they had talked about meeting, and Monzon, he said that he had met Monzon in jail, and Monzon said, I can definitely, he was like, it's possible, I was with a lot of women, I could definitely have been your dad, I don't know, but that was like the going rumor, and I'm not sure if it was ever determined or not.
Huh. Yeah, I've never heard of that. That's crazy.
Yeah. I think he actually might have fought Galindez's kid and beat him. So
that'd be actually, pretty crazy.
You know that I say that. You know what? Let me look at it really quick. Hold on one second.
That's well. I can definitely say that Argentine boxing, man, they don't play. There's definitely a lot of local popularity when it comes to Argentine boxing, and I guess I'm somewhat qualified to say that at this point. But
I would say no.
That's pretty crazy. I never knew about any of that.
Okay, Ramon Mayano.
Huh.
Yes.
Well, good memory then.
Okay, I remember it now. Yeah, that's I believe that was Ramon Mayano was the name. And I believe that was the guy that was considered potentially Monzon's son.
Huh. That's pretty crazy, dude.
Or at least he met with him, and I'm not sure if it was ever like discovered or like determined if that was true or not, but that's what and looking at him now, you can kind of see the facial features actually. Like they look similar.
Well, Campbell Hatton's got a long way to go to prove that he's even.
It's tough, man. It's just a tough, tough thing. And especially like, if your dad was such a famous fighter. To carry on that, you have such a it's just expectations, you know what I mean? People, even if it's not right and it's not deserved and it's not fair, people just put that on you, and you feel it in yourself. Well, my dad did X, Y, and Z. I gotta have to do that. And especially if he's in your corner and a guy that was,
a whole lot of examples of that just not being a real great idea, but yeah. I don't know.
Well, before we finish it, though, I think the best out there right now would be Tim Zhu, no?
Oh, almost without question. Tim Zhu looks like an actually good fighter, not just some sideshow or something like that. But I guess that just doesn't surprise me because of the way that Costa Zhu was always at least portrayed. He was always portrayed as somebody who kind of had a very routine and structured like training regimen, who was very disciplined and stuff like that. And so I guess that doesn't really surprise me that like his son might, you know, have had a similar kind of mindset for being a fighter. And yeah, Tim Zhu is actually a really good fighter. People are getting a little carried away. They talk about like bringing him over to face so-and-so, but he's got time. He's definitely got time to develop, and he looks like he's developing really well.
I'm excited for his future.
Yeah,
it's interesting. For sure. It's cool to watch him now. And I remember him just like I remember seeing Chavez Jr.'s kid going into the ring with their dads when they were really young, carrying their belt, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I always liked Costa Zhu too. I always felt like he got
who didn't. Everybody loves Costa Zhu. You couldn't not.
Yeah, he got kind of a raw deal just in general because he was never really like respected. Not until like the tail end of his career where he was like he had a shitload of injuries and stuff like that, but. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. There's a long way for Campbell Hatton to go, and this kind of stuff is not going to be helpful for him to giving him these kinds of wins. But overall, also beyond not being helpful, that was kind of worrisome toward the main event because there were a couple of decisions on the card that were like, you know, home cooking type stuff.
Well, that's why Usyk thing. I mean, if he didn't get that decision, there would have been a major like. Outcry.
That would have been bad.
If it was a close fight, it would have been, you know, considering I don't remember the exact judge that did it, but I remember looking at the scorecards this morning, and one of the judges scored like the first two rounds or so for Joshua, when there was no way you could have put round one for Joshua. Like, it was impossible.
No.
You know, and it's like, that was already going to give you like the outline of how they were thinking it regardless.
Yeah, so it's a good thing he stepped up and did what he did, performed how he did, because
you can't leave it to them, man.
Oh man. Well, luckily it was a good fight and it was entertaining and the right fighter won and all that kind of stuff. And that's, like I said, it's what's kind of annoying about the post-fight discourse is that nothing crazy happened in the main event. Like nothing weird. There were no fouls. There was no monkey business with the cards or anything. Like, I mean, not really.
Left our head scratching afterwards as boxing fans are like, wait a minute, this isn't normal.
Yeah, wasn't something supposed to happen?
Yeah.
Apparently not. Either way, you know, it's a lot of fun to every time.
Let's just go with that.
Yeah, he's always a bodybuilder and he always sucked. No, it's always fun when a big heavyweight fight actually delivers, because it seems like it's not that often, but anyway, no, we had to do a post-fight show on this, considering how fun it was. So I appreciate you coming on with me and just doing a little bit of Oleksandr Usyk discussion, dude.
Yeah, man. He's, at this point now, he's probably considered the best fight in the world. First ballot Hall of Famer. I'm just, you know what? And whenever a big win or a big upset of this, you know, a magnitude happens, it's always great now to see what happens. I love that when it happens in the heavyweight division, because it's going to throw things up in the air again. And there's like, you know, pieces to be made. Unfortunately, it's not going to lead up to a heavyweight undisputed champion that the world wants to see, because things now have to play out in their own way when an upset like this happens. But it's excitement. It's something that just like shakes the grounds a little bit, instead of just the same mundane, well, he's not going to fight me. He's not going to fight me. We're still going to do contract negotiations while figuring things out. Like, this leaves things open now and creates some excitement. Yep. Usyk is now all of a sudden one of the major players in the division, a guy that others have to come for. And it's going to be fascinating now within the next year to see how all this stuff plays out. We have Fury Wilder 3 that hopefully still comes off in the next couple of weeks. We have this potential rematch to come up in the next year. There's a lot of other heavyweights on the horizon that are still either coming up or still as contenders, whether it can be Andy Ruiz, Luis Ortiz, Big Baby Anderson coming up, you know, a host of other guys, you know what I mean, that are still hanging around there and doing things. So, like, the heavyweight division's healthy right now, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen with it.
Well, I don't know what's going to be coming on this coming up this weekend, because it's kind of still up in the air whether or not there's going to be.
I forgot to even mention guys like Dillian White and other, you know, from the UK over there. Like, you know, so the health is very healthy. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. And anytime something happens where it's like a changing of the guard, it seems to be a pretty good thing for the heavyweight division. But I was going to say, this weekend, it was supposed to be Teofimo Lopez versus George Kambosos on Triller. I have absolutely no idea if that's even still going through. Haven't seen an update. Otherwise, there's some shows on the zone. I guess
we're going to find out this week. Yeah, we're going to find out this week whether it's supposed to be the second or, well, I don't think, there's no way it's going to happen on October 2nd, this coming weekend.
It seems unlikely. But the last news I saw was that George Kambosos was yet to sign off on the date change and the venue change, and that they needed him to sign off.
Well, they need to hurry up and pay him.
So that's so I guess they better figure something out.
At the end of the day, I hate to say it, but I mean, I know he has the ball in his court and he can pony up a lot of money for this, as he should, because he the ball is in his court. Now they need his signature for this to go through. So I can't blame him for being annoyed again to go around after Lopez caught COVID, other stuff going through. It's been postponed 5 different times now, whatever it's been. Like, he's fed up and he just wants to go through it. But if they give him enough money and offer it enough that it's worth his while, then, you know, I guess it's getting moved again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what exactly is going to happen with this Kamboso situation, but hopefully they pull something off. But what that does mean, since there's kind of some shit up in the air about this week, is that that at least gives us an opportunity to do some other stuff. So you and I were talking about doing another true crime podcast this week. So I guess for anybody looking for podcasts, video casts, whatever the hell you want to call them, all these newfangled jingle jangles, look out for that stuff this week. But meanwhile, like I said,
we got a good one cooking.
I'm
not going to give out the name, but I'll just say it's in regards to the heavyweight division that we're just talking about today.
It'll definitely have at least some kind of contemporary meaning, but be on the lookout for that. In the meanwhile, dude, I do appreciate you hopping back on with me and doing a quick little reaction to the fights, man. It's
of course, stuff. Man. This was a blast. This was such a big fight that how could we not discuss it right away?
Totally.
Both of us were really hyped afterwards. I think the boxing world is really excited for any time something like this happens. You know, it breeds new life into the sport. So,
Totally. Well, everybody, thank you for listening in or watching. We appreciate it. And if you would also, subscribe to the YouTube channel, helpful. Subscribe to the podcast, wherever it is you're listening in to the podcast on those apps. But also, if you're on social media, follow Aris Pina at Punch Zone. I've done this like 9,000 times and I flubbed it, but Punch Zone Aris on Twitter. Follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. And also, if you're on Facebook, go to the Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio page there. And I mean, I think I covered all bases there, right?
I think everything I hit. Yeah, man.
I think so. All right, man. We'll talk soon.
Later.
All right, later, everybody.